Hi, welcome back to ART. I'm your host, Carolyn Bailey. In this, our second series of interviews, in association with VegFest UK, we'll be addressing the issue of total liberation through radical veganism in the lead-up to the VegFest UK London event in October 2017. In today's interview, Roger and I are pleased to welcome back to AR Zone longtime social justice advocate Katrina Fox. Katrina is the founder and editor of the vegan business blog, veganbusinessmedia.com, the host of Vegan Business Talk podcast, and author of Vegan Ventures, Start and Grow an Ethical Business. She's been vegan since 1996 and has had her ideas about the interconnections between human and other animals' social justice featured in numerous books and articles. Her goal is to inform and inspire as many people as possible to embrace a vision of a world in which all beings are free to thrive. It's a pleasure to welcome you today, Katrina. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's lovely to be here, Carolyn. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
You're very welcome, Katrina. Katrina, you're about to leave for London to speak at VegFest UK, which must be very exciting for you. You're doing a number of things there this year, but one of them that's particularly interesting is your talk in the Animal Rights Room on the power of storytelling to promote animal rights. Would you please tell us a little bit about that and why that's so important to you?
Yeah, certainly. Yes, I'm very much looking forward to going back to my original hometown of London, where I'm from. It's always nice to be able to get a chance to go back there. And yeah, to be part of VegFest UK is very exciting. So I've been asked to speak on as part of the Animal Rights Summit, which is like a sort of mini conference as part of the big VegFest UK event. And I thought I would speak on the power of stories to promote animal rights, because as a journalist, my background as a journalist, I trade in stories. You know, that's what we do. Journalists tell stories. And I think it's really important, particularly nowadays, that we've got all these new platforms as animal rights activists to tell stories way more than we used to. So in the past, we just had traditional media. So we had to rely on the media to cover animal rights stories. And as we know, in the past, that hasn't always worked out so well. But now, of course, we've got social media, we've got blogs, we've got podcasts like the wonderful podcast we're on now, to be able to share issues around animal rights, to be able to share the stories of farmed animals, to get people to see them in a different light. We have multimedia opportunities to tell stories, so not just the written word, but audio and video. So it's actually quite an exciting time, I think, for social justice advocates and, of course, animal rights activists. So I'm going to be showcasing some of the ways some activists have used and continue to use stories in a way that they enable them to go viral and really get people interested in them and to share them, because that's what we want with stories. We want people to share them so that they get out to a bigger audience and bring more people in so that they start to understand about animal rights.
Sounds very interesting, Katrina. Thank you.
So, hi, Katrina, and I hope you're doing well. This is Roger from Sunny Island, which I always say is my first joke.
Hello, Roger.
What I'd like to do before I ask you a question, I want to read a little section from a new edited book by David Nybert, and it's called Animal Oppression and Capitalism. I want to read from the intro, and then I'll ask you a question. The intro goes like this, that critical animal studies promotes scholarship and activism that recognizes and challenges the deeply entangled nature of all forms of oppression. That is, the myriad ways in which speciesism, sexism, racism, ableism, and classism are mutually reinforcing systems of domination. As each form of oppression both augments and reinforces the other. Such recognition leads to the realization that scholars stroke activists in the struggle against the oppression of other animals must work with other groups fighting various forms of oppression and the capitalist system. By the mid-20th century, elites had to find ways to surmount the natural limitations to the basic and destructive imperative of the capitalist system, the imperative of unending growth and expansion, in order to continue the accumulation of vast wealth. They turned to the ideology of neoliberalism in a renewed drive for laissez-faire politics, in which govern nearly unrestrained profit-taking. So my question, Katrina, is, given the grossly oppressive nature of capitalism, a system in which we will never have a system where all will be free to thrive, are we really going to get animal liberation through capitalist business and consumerist principles?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, Roger, and it's something I think that animal activists and particularly vegan business owners wrestle with. And look, I don't think we know the answer, to be quite honest, because I know it's very easy to sort of say, OK, well, we'll never achieve this. Just because we haven't so far, I think, doesn't mean we never will. And what I find with these arguments is that while I think it's great to critique these things and point these things out, but what I don't hear is a lot of solutions. So what I hear from a lot of activists is, yeah, capitalism's bad. We must, it's oppressive. We must get rid of capitalism. But I'm not really hearing any solutions that work. I mean, you know, sometimes people throw up socialism or communism. Now, look, I'm not an economist, so this isn't an area of my particular speciality. But from what we've seen in other countries, they haven't necessarily been that successful either. And so sometimes I hear, well, okay, let's replace it with something else. But with what? So I'm not hearing a lot of solutions around this. So I guess from where I'm at working within the vegan business sphere is that, yes, we're working in a system that is corrupt, but is it the system itself that's corrupt, or is it simply that the human nature that's, you know, been taking part in it have been doing the wrong thing? Because I think we are seeing with vegan business owners, we are seeing ethical business, and not just towards animals, but towards people and planet. Just yesterday, I interviewed someone on my own podcast, you know, who are doing amazing, you know, they're creating bags of some kind, and you know, they're using certified sustainable materials. They're made in a local factory where they actually know the people that are working with them, and of course they're vegan. So it's interesting, and I also hear from some people, you know, they do believe in something called ethical capitalism. I don't know if that's the case, but I guess where I'm coming from is, at the moment, this is where we're at. And yes, we can sit on the sidelines and say capitalism is bad, or we can go, yeah, capitalism is bad, but we're in that system at the moment. How can we navigate that the best we can and showcase and put forward and demonstrate that it's possible to run an ethical business that's good for people, animals and planet? So that's kind of my take on that.
Yeah, well, that's a great answer, and thank you for that. And of course, you know, we all do kind of fall into the thing about talking about supply and demand, don't we? And so that's the kind of capitalist principle. You know, some sociologists have called, in a very kind of speciesist language, I guess, they've called capitalism a dog-eat-dog society or system. And I think what Nybert would say, for example, is that there are other systems in which inequality and exploitation are not inherent. But of course, you know, you can counter that by saying, well, it depends who's kind of, as it were, running them and that kind of stuff. I just think that the answer to your point was that, you know, the capitalist system is based on the idea of the very few exploiting the very many. And so it's actually based on exploitation in a very kind of entangled way, in Nybert's terms.
Yeah. I guess that it's kind of interesting, because I know other people see it somewhat differently, and it's about sort of encouraging entrepreneurism. So allowing, you know, people's creativity to flow by, you know, creating things that maybe we didn't know we wanted. And I'm probably going to give an example that's perhaps not, you might agree that's not the best example, but you know, when people used to use horse and buggies to get around, and I think it was Henry Ford that said, look, if you give people what they want, we'd have just had faster horses and buggies. But instead they created the car, and people didn't really know they wanted a car, but you know, you might agree or disagree that the car has improved people's lives or not. But I think it's that, I think there's a spirit of entrepreneurialism, but it's a case of, I suppose in this case, the many doing badly by it. So there's been certain individuals or companies or corporations who have done exactly what you've said, you know, come from a perspective of greed and, you know, profit at all costs, and the ethics have kind of gone out of it. But I'm not sure, I don't know that it's necessarily an inherent system. It's become a dog eat dog, but I don't know if it really necessarily the roots of it started out that way, or if it has to be that way. Do you get where I'm coming from? I know you might not agree with me, but I'm just kind of, yeah, looking at it.
No, I do actually, and I struggle with this issue myself, because as I said, you know, we do kind of have to fall back into the fact that, you know, we all buy stuff, and you know, that means that things have got to be made and all the rest of it, and so there is a system of production and consumption that is necessary. You know, I understand all that, but it's an interesting thing to struggle with, really, this issue, I think, and I think that's why the value of David Nybert's work is the fact that he's opening up this you know, large question which most people tend to shy away from.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are very important issues. And yeah, I haven't read the book. I know I'm aware of it because I think our mutual friend Lara Drew has got a chapter in there as well. So it is something, yeah, for sure to look at. I tell you what I do find frustrating, Roger, and I may have even said this on a previous podcast, is what I find frustrating in the current system is that businesses that are doing the right thing, their end products end up having to be more expensive. So in a way, they're being penalized. So, for example, the interview I did with yesterday with a woman in America in Los Angeles, you know, it costs her so much more to, say, buy these certified sustainable materials. She could just make her bags out of cheap PVC. And, you know, the end product would be, you know, $20, $30 in Kmart or somewhere or Target. But, you know, she chooses to use these ethical materials to have them made locally. So she's not, you know, using child labor in China, which again brings the price right down. I think she said to me there was one bag maker who she knew, and the cost to make the bags was $6 because they were being made in China. I mean, goodness knows how much the workers were being paid, something ridiculous. That included shipping. Whereas, you know, her products are a lot more expensive. And often you'll get, you know, vegans or animal activists saying, oh, that's terrible. These vegan businesses, they're charging so much more money. You know, they're bad, but they're not. And I think that's what the shame is, that businesses that are ethical, that are really doing the right thing, they're being penalized instead of supported by, you know, these systems. So I would love to see, you know, more grants, more subsidies of ethical businesses that tick all the boxes when it comes to people, animals and planet. So I think that's definitely an issue that I think is a shame. And I think we have to sort of get that out into the public arena so that ethical businesses aren't kind of, you know, attacked by saying, oh, you're just ripping off the vegan community. I've seen all that happen, you know, with vegan shoe companies. And you know, some of them are doing some really good things. Like I know Vegan Style in Melbourne have brought a payment system in, which I think is really great because, you know, their shoes tend to be, you know, again, they're good for people, animals and planet. So some people can't afford to, you know, just drop $200 in one go to buy a pair of shoes. But they've addressed that, and they've organized a payment plan over time. But at the end of the day, I would really like to see these systems, both government and big business, actually genuinely supporting ethical businesses. So I do see that as an issue that needs fixing. It really frustrates me, you know, that a business that's doing the right thing is getting penalized and punished.
Yeah, I mean, that really resonates with me. If you think about plant-based milk, it was the vegan pioneers that first initially brought that into being. And then I remember the debates in the 70s and 80s when people were saying, well, do you just support the vegan, you know, the vegan company who's got the slightly more expensive stuff? Or do you support the supermarkets who are starting to bring soy milk in, for example, in order to make it available,
yes,
as it were, for the masses? And it ended up being a real kind of fudge because I think we just ended up trying to support both at the same time.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's still happening now, as we've seen, you know, we've now got, I mean, and I'm sure, you know, Roger, you've been vegan, you know, I've been vegan 21 years. I think you've probably been vegan double that. Hope I'm not aging you incorrectly there. But, you know, I think what we're seeing now, I mean, would we have thought, even in my lifetime, and I'm sure you wouldn't have seen it, you know, meat companies and dairy companies buying up vegan brands, not to destroy them, like not to buy them and then just get rid of them, but to actually buy them and be part of their systems. I mean, that is just quite bizarre. And I think it's throwing up all kinds of ethical challenges for us as animal activists when this happens. And we're, you know, discussing, well, is this good? Is this going to be a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And I think where it comes, and I spoke to Adrian Ling about this, and you mentioned, you know, one of the pioneers of vegan milk, particularly in the UK and Europe. And I think, you know, he's sort of said along the lines of, I think we're almost going to have like different levels of ethical business. So yes, you've got the Ben and Jerry's, for example, you know, bringing their vegan ice cream or their dairy-free ice cream into the UK. Yeah, and look, yeah, in one sense, I think that's positive because, say, for example, if you're out in the suburbs somewhere, I'm a city girl, so it's easy for me to get vegan goods. If someone's out in the suburbs and, you know, they want to get some ice cream for their kid's birthday party and they go to their local supermarket, there's not likely necessary to be, you know, the best small ethical vegan brand. So better that they buy the Ben and Jerry's dairy free and at least, you know, take that to their kids' birthday party and say, hey, isn't the dairy free ice cream lovely? And that may shift some perspectives. Yes, I know it's going back into a company that also produces a lot of dairy. And then we've also got the argument that, well, if the supply is big enough, maybe they will switch their business model. I thought it was interesting in the US that a big dairy in New York, Elmhurst Milked, they literally kept losing money with dairy and they've now completely switched. They've ditched cows and replaced them with nuts. That, I think, is quite interesting and inspiring. So I think there's kind of there's all this is coming up and it's new territory for us as activists. And we're not quite sure what to do with it. So I think we're sort of watching, we're looking, we're analyzing, and I don't know where we'll be at, but I think it is good, like you mentioned, to really point out what, you know, with ethical vegan companies like Plamil, for example, like some of the others I've mentioned that really do the right thing by people, animals and planet, who are, if you like, the gold standard of ethical business on all levels. I think we mustn't forget those or, you know, support them wherever we can. So, you know, look, if we're in a hurry and we need a bit of soya milk or rice milk and we have to run to our local Sainsbury's, I don't think we need to beat ourselves up about it. But when we're in a position to, and we have the budget to, perhaps, you know, buy a Plamil chocolate or a product from a really ethical vegan company, say at a veg fest or a vegan festival, that we do that as well wherever we can.
Yeah, it's a real dilemma, isn't it? You know, I mean, I know the argument about Ben and Jerry's is the fact that they're connected with Unilever as a massive vivisector. But I think, you know, to some degree, we're going to have to get used to this because this kind of moral dilemma is going to come up, you know, more and more. There's a famous sociological film in which it says that capitalism will buy and sell anything, including people, and of course, including other animals too. And so I think the fact is that they're making business decisions. We're not necessarily going to like them, but I think we're going to have to get used to them.
But I think as well, the fact that they are even that they've recognised that consumers are interested in, whether it's plant-based for health or whether it's ethical for animal welfare or saving the planet, I think they are pricking up their ears and taking notice. And as we know, you know, social change does take a long time. So I think it's kind of interesting that they're even seeing that, you know, ethical vegan business is something that they can make money from. And look, if they can make the money ethically, far better that they do that, I suppose. But yeah, it is a very...
Yeah, but they will prick their ears up because there's a market there. But of course, because there's no morality behind it, they'll just drop it at the first problem just as quick, won't they? So that's the issue, I suppose.
They will, but then I think that's where we come in as activists, in that we have to keep telling those stories. We have to keep educating and enlightening and inspiring the general public, and I'm kind of putting them into one big mass, so that they continue to demand ethical products, so that it literally becomes built into the system, and that the companies know that, okay, if they do something wrong, that they'll get penalised in some way for it, whether that's, and we're seeing that, I suppose, in the fact that, you know, dairy sales worldwide are going down, you know, quite a positive thing. And yes, they're looking at different ways to remedy that. And the smart ones, as I say, are doing what Elmhurst Milk have done and completely ditching dairy. So I'm hoping we'll see more of that. And I hope that this will start to get through to someone, like you say, some of these bigger companies, because it is a dilemma. You know, it's, I think Gary Smith of the Thinking Vegan spoke about the Dia sale to the Japanese pharmaceutical company, that it's not right to throw laboratory animals under the bus to save farmed animals. And those are very important issues.
Katrina, you've been working with VegFest UK in preparation for the very first VegFest trade show, which is on the Friday of the VegFest weekend, which is 20th of October. What is the trade show about, and how can people who are interested in it find out more?
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting that the VegFest UK team are putting on the UK's first ever vegan trade show. So basically what it is, it's the consumer show gets around, I think, 12 to 15,000 people through. So it's really full on and there are queues everywhere. So what the guys, Tim and Alan, have done for the trade show is to make an event especially for trade industry professionals. So vegan business owners, entrepreneurs, retailers, wholesalers, distributors, buyers, and the media. So the media have got got great facilities where they can come along, they can see what the latest new products are, find out what the latest trends are. There's a whole series of different areas like plant-based chef's corner, celebrity zone. There's a vegan support area, which I'm hosting. So I'm hosting back-to-back talks for the whole day to help vegan business owners on things like social media and content marketing, PR, how to raise capital and finance, startups and some other things. So that's really to give support to vegan business owners to either grow or start their businesses. So it's basically a trade show like any other trade show, but specifically a vegan one for vegan products and services. So it's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. It does sound exciting. You've also been working with Kathy Devine in Sydney. Kathy's putting on a very exciting, a groundbreaking conference next year in March. Did you want to mention that as well, please?
Yeah, definitely. So Kathy's lovely. She's, as you know, she's a vegan powerhouse, publishing powerhouse. She's an author and publisher. She publishes Australian Vegans Journal. And she'd written a book called Plant Powered Women, which is about her female vegan leaders sharing their vision for a more compassionate and greener world. And she'd been brewing this idea of actually having a live event based around the book, and she's finally launched it. The first one kicks off in Sydney next year in March 2018, and she's already putting together a really fabulous, diverse lineup of female speakers. So anyone can attend the event, but all the speakers are female, and she's got speakers from all ages, from all walks of life, different abilities, different ethnic diversities. She's really, you know, very much a champion of diversity, Kathy. She makes a real effort to make sure that the program of speakers are diverse, and particularly giving opportunities for women who have never spoken before, because that's the idea of the conference, is to give women the confidence and the skills to be able to go out and get speaking gigs elsewhere. So if they're working in the corporate field, to be able to get a talk there, or if they're working in the nonprofit sector, to speak there. And so wherever women are in the world, wherever their sector or their area is, to just give them the confidence and skills to go out there and spread the message of compassion. So I think it is, you're right, it is a groundbreaking event, and she's just about to release more names of female speakers. I think it's going to be really exciting.
I agree with you. I think it's incredibly exciting, and I think the whole idea behind the conference is absolutely brilliant. And yes, I couldn't speak highly enough about Kathy. I think she's a wonderful person.
She is. She's amazing. I said just before I did this interview, we were just messaging on Facebook, because the conference, I'm doing the PR for the conference. So we got them into plant-based news, and Veg News have just published it. It went up this morning, so I was just letting Kathy know. So, yeah, it's good to see that it's getting out there and that the vegan media are supporting it. And of course, Kathy's hoping it's kicking off in Sydney, but ultimately, you know, she wants this across Australian cities and then actually globally as well. So I think it's a movement. I think it's going to be more than just a conference series. I think it's actually going to be a little bit of a movement, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. We're actually speaking with Kathy in a few weeks, so I can't wait.
Good.
Yeah. Katrina, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Katrina, good luck in London, and thank you also for everything that you continue to do on behalf of both humans and other animals.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. Right back at you. You do an amazing job of the and everything that you and Roger do. So,
nurses past maturity. No member of the animal kingdom ever did a thing to me. So I don't eat red meat or white fish. Don't give me no blue cheese.